Blog Talk Radio.
Is it behavioral? Is it
I think it had something to do with behavioral attitude or something, they were saying something to that. But I mean, yeah, since it was, you know, when I first heard about that, it was saying transcribing about it, so I kind of don't want to describe much about it yet till, you know, we get more on it. But
well, why does it seem, and this may be just me, but it seems like the stigma of cheating is almost worse than getting caught doing drugs or getting caught, you know, using some performance-enhancing drugs. I think cheating, you know, it also goes towards not only to the athlete part, but it goes towards the student part too, because if you cheat, you know, in any college, you get kicked out of school. You can use drugs at any college and not get kicked out of school, but if you cheat, you're getting kicked out of school. So it seems like, you know, the stigma for this is, you know, is very high. Do you guys think that he will be able to come back to Notre Dame? And if he does come back, he'll be able to regain a starting role? Dex?
I mean, you know, it depends. If Brian Kelly is still there, it's possible. You know, if he's not, I don't know. It's a little bit too early for that. I'd say right now, assuming Kelly stays, he'll come back, and it's possible he'll regain his starting. I mean, who else does Notre Dame have? All the guy has to do is just work out this offseason, stay doing the right thing, come back, and he can regain his job. Tommy Rees? I mean, who do they have? And who do they have coming in that's not talking about they're going to transfer a quarterback?
I mean, we all know, most likely Notre Dame is not going to go back to a national championship. I guess going to a national championship, your name being out there. Let's just say Kelly, you know, if another program opens up, a big-time program opens it up, if he decides to stay there and go there, let's say a program like, you know, Auburn or something like that, or Michigan, you know, and his name comes up. If he goes there, you know, then maybe a guy like, you know, will come back.
I don't think you leave Notre Dame for another position unless something extraneous happens, unless you're going to the NFL. I don't think, you know, for what it is, Notre Dame, you know, you are at the top seat of coaches when you're at Notre Dame. So I don't think you can go down unless something, you know, and extenuating circumstances happen. But while we're speaking on that, Eddie Vanderduz, number one recruit from Notre Dame this year, has decommitted. Gunnar Keel, the number one recruit last year, has decommitted. And Aaron Lynch, the number one recruit the year before that, has decommitted, as well as many others, you know, besides that. There seems to be something going on at Notre Dame with these kids not wanting to stay here. Could it just be the South Bend maybe isn't what people think it is? You know, it's not really a place. Maybe it's a small town, or do you think there's other factors involved, Tex?
Yeah, there could be some other factors involved. I mean, a lot of these kids are leaving small towns into go to another small town. Where it's basically the same thing, and it's up north, it's cold. These kids come from the south, or they come from the west. You know, it's cold up there. It's not something that they want to deal with. I also believe that you can't prove it, but people know that the whole thing is up as far as Notre Dame being a championship contender is. I think they had their shot last year. I mean, this past BCS title game, I think that's up. I think it's back in the gutter for many, many more years, despite getting all these, these top recruits that they claim to get. It never adds up to anything, though. But I think people see it's over. They're moving to the playoffs. I don't think as far as title game implications are concerned, I think the guys see this with Notre Dame as them not being able to compete at that level come playoff time. I mean, that's very legitimate.
Abandoned ship syndrome. Mike, what do you think about that?
Maybe two. I just think maybe these kids that's coming in thinking that Notre Dame, you know, right now as a team is being overrated. You know, how their schedule was last year and how they got beat down in the national championship. And maybe they think maybe that was just a year they had was, a, you know, a fluke year. They had a favorable, pretty much soft schedule.
Well, last year we were saying that Notre Dame needed to get B-side kind of players. Could it be that maybe these B-side players are just not fitting in at Notre Dame and they're choosing to go somewhere else once they get there and see that they don't fit in there? What do you think, Mike?
That's cool. Or maybe they come in with Notre Dame's, you know, academic program where it's so strenuous, you know, tough, of course, to make a grade. Thinking, like I was trying to say about, you know, Golson, you know, maybe, you know, I wonder how his academic was getting in Notre Dame, because we all know you have to, you know, have the academic to get into that school, too. I mean, look at that. So maybe he folded under the pressure of that. I mean, maybe some of these kids here thinking that they don't know if they could maintain the standards, too, for the level of academics while playing football. That's Notre Dame is so
What do you think about that, Tex? You think B-side players, you think they can fit in at Notre Dame? Or do you think maybe that has something to do with the transfers?
It might have something to do with the transfer. You know, different cultures and different places. Not everybody fits in Notre Dame, just like not everybody will fit in at USC or Miami or Alabama, you know what I'm saying, or West Virginia or Texas or Texas A&M. You know, it's just where people feel comfortable. And people also want to compete. You know, everybody wants to win. The teams want to be visible. Notre Dame is visible, but guys really want to win, and they want to play.
Yeah, I did some independent research, and it show you know, and I've been noticing the number of transfers in general that are leaving the different schools. I posted on a TMP Firestorm talk show page. From 2010, seven out of the top 20 recruits are no longer with the school they signed with. Five out of the top 10 wide receivers are no longer with the school. Five out of the top 10 running backs. 15 out of the top 20 quarterbacks have transferred from the colleges they originally signed with. Do you guys think that maybe they need to institute some different rules on transferring to maybe discourage these kids from transferring? Or do you think that they should be allowed to? Or what are your thoughts in general on that? Because it's almost like free agency now with college football. What do you guys think about that?
Well, the NCAA has always been a business. They don't like to say it, but it is a business. So... Go ahead, Mike.
I'm going to say, if that's the case, then they need to have a penalty about coaches that leave. You know, coaches.
What'd you say, Mike?
You know, if they're going to do that, then there should be some type of, you know, penalty of coaches leaving for a year. Because, you know, you're going to probably see coaches leave for another program. So it's the same thing.
Coaching is a job. That's, you know, like I said, that's the difference. Coaching is a job. These kids, you know, they're supposed to be college kids, even though, you know, like I said, if I'm a regular student and I transfer from Texas to Florida State, I don't have to wait a year before I can go to class. I just go to class. So do you think maybe it's fair? Do you think maybe there should be no restrictions on transferring? Or
no, I don't think it should be any restrictions on it.
You know what? I'm sorry, Mike, just real quick. If these coaches can just up and leave these kids, you know, I don't have a problem with a kid transferring. You know, they want to, you know, the adults kind of get a free pass when it comes to the NCAA, the adults, the administrators, coaches. You know, everybody's getting a free pass except for the students when it comes to, you know, being mobile and being able to transfer. You see what I'm saying? So if you're not going to crack down on the coaches, then, you know, I don't see why the kids can't transfer. And the percentages are low. You know what I'm saying? You don't have one, 2,000, 3,000 kids trying to switch schools. You see what I'm saying? But these coaches, they come and they go. The assistants, they come and they go. And, you know, nobody ever really cares.
Yeah. It seems like recently with social media, we've had a lot more recruits speaking out about the recruiting process. You know, we had a guy from recruit that's going to Miami say that Urban Meyer basically was about to cry when he told him he wasn't going to switch to Ohio State. We had the recruit recently from Notre Dame flushing the Alabama letters down the toilet. It seems like a lot of these processes are going to start becoming more public. But I think sometimes, you know, especially, you know, we had the case with USC with Kyle Fitz. You know, he was promised that he would get the early enroll, and he wasn't. And, you know, he came out very publicly, him and his coach, and, you know, he switched commitments to UCLA. So I think a lot of times, especially with the larger schools that will oversign kids, you know, they'll sign, you know, they'll really only have maybe five spots open, but, you know, if they're Alabama or, you know, USC or some school, you know, large school, they can sign, you know, 25 kids at that spot. You know, and it seems like, you know, sometimes it's just not a spot. I mean, I don't know, maybe if these kids, you know, I guess, you know, when you have NFL aspirations, you want to get on the field as soon as possible. You know, some of them stay and compete, but, you know, as we've seen with Notre Dame, some of them, you know, if it's also continuing circumstances, it seems like they just, you know, they jump ship. And, you know, I think, you know, if you're a recruit and you see that you're in your recruiting class, that there's also two other quarterbacks that might be better than you, maybe you might think you need to stop going to another school. So, you know, that's, you know, I, you know, it goes kind of goes hand in hand. But anyway, like Tex said with go ahead, Tex.
No, I said it's a multitude of reasons why it could happen. And also there's the factor that, you know, a lot of guys are four or five-star guys, but, you know, there's Gunnar Keel and, you know, Vanderdas, they go, not even him, but, you know, guys like Keel, they go to Notre Dame, and then there's Troy Gurley that's going to Georgia and starting right off the bat because he's that good. You know what I'm saying? So you don't have a ton of kids like that, you know, freshmen like that to just come in and, you know, they're able to contribute like that. I mean, T.J. Yeldon and Duke Johnson are two more examples of that. Exactly. So, and or somebody like Manziel, a redshirt freshman that, you know, he jumps in there, or Mariota. You know what I'm saying? These redshirt freshmen jumping in there, taking over.
Well, you know, like I said last season, I mean, personally, I don't hold it against the kid if he goes to a school and doesn't start until his second or until his third or maybe even senior year. You know, I mean, in some cases, like I said, especially with running backs, to me it just seems like, you know, if you show the talent, you're getting, you know, a fresh pair of legs too. You know, so, you know, I think, you know, sometimes I don't think you want a running back that's going to start at, you know, 4 years. That's a lot of carries, you know, especially, you know, to be putting on some of these kids' legs. And especially, you know, if you got a freshman running back coming in, that means they're using him as the workhorse. You know, look at Marcus Lattimore. You know, this is a cat, you know, he, former, you know, he still got drafted, but, you know, this was a guy, you know, talking about, you know, top five, top 10 pick, and, you know, he's been running the rock there for the past 3 years, and injuries happen, you know, especially when you're the centerpiece of your offense. So, I mean, to me, you know, I think if you get a guy that's, he's got late bloomers, you know, start your senior year, you know, show out, you know, I wouldn't have any problem with, drafting him or. So I think kids need to take that into consideration too. But like Tex was saying, the transition to playoffs might affect Notre Dame. And in that same sense, this is the last year of the BCS. This has been a very controversial era for college football and sports in general. Do you guys think that the BCS, how has it affected college football? Has it been for the good or for the bad? Mike?
We all know, we've been rapping, talking stuff about this for a minute about it, like it should have been a playoff. You know, finally, this is the last year of it, so, hey, you know, oopsie-daisy on it, because, man, it's been something.
What do you think, Tex?
I don't know if it's really, I, I'm, I, I couldn't figure out if it's hurt or helped college football. I think it kind of shut down some of these programs that are fairly good but not getting a crack at a BCS title, programs like Boise State. Teams like that. I think although they didn't, they haven't had many great teams, Notre Dame, although they just got through playing in a BCS title game. I don't know if it hurt or helped anybody a whole lot. I don't think it was the perfect system. I think that it had its ups. It had its downs. I don't think it was the perfect system, and a playoff is always better, but the BCS wasn't the antichrist that people made it out to be. I think for the most part, they got it right with the teams that were in there. I don't think anybody really missed out except for, again, programs like Boise State who really just now, came along.
Well, to me, like I said, I don't know. I kind of go back and forth with the BCS. It's like, it's, to me, sometimes it seems good, but then when I look at the statistics of, like you said, of how the larger schools, especially schools from the SEC conference, have tended to get the better spots, it's not favorable. Even if there was a playoff system, it would have been clear, if you see a school beat a school, you can't complain about that. But, like I tell anybody, any system where you choose who's going to play, you're going to have some controversy, especially when you have a preseason ranking system that's going to have the teams pre-ranked based on, what people think. And it's weird that college football is just now about to get some semblance of a playoff system, after 100 years of playing, basically. It's not even all of college football. It's just D1 college football. Think about how weird that is. Every other level of college football, every other sport period has had a playoff system except for college football. And that's just really weird. It's gonna be weird not having the BCS though. Everybody starts getting happy around week 8 to see what's gonna happen. And we're not gonna have that. There's not gonna be any more. Selection Sunday, where they pick, not Selection Sunday, but, they pick the, show the final BCS ranking. So, like I said, definitely it's going to be, it's going to be interesting to see how things go. That being said and done, who do you guys think have been some of the standout players over this BCS era? We've had a lot of guys come up. The BCS era has also coincided with the reinsertion of option offenses. We've had the spread option, really hit. It's even spread into the NFL. So, who do you guys think of? Maybe your top quarterbacks in the BCS era, Tex?
I gotta go with AJ McCarron. If you're talking about how much a guy means to his team and how he's performed in BCS title games, I think I might have. Are we talking about BCS title games or just BCS period?
BCS era period. I've been reading a lot of lists that have Vince Young as the top quarterback of the BCS era, and it kind of surprised me, seeing as they only have one national championship. And he didn't win a Heisman. So, I just wanted to see what you guys, who would you guys have up there? Basically, like I said, if you could pick one quarterback out of the BCS era to have starting your team, who would that be?
I like Vince Young, too, but I'll have to take Michael Vick.
As your starting quarterback?
Yes.
Tex?
That's kind of tough. We talking about just for what they were in college, right?
Yeah.
God, that's tough, man. Oh man. I don't even know. I want to say Vince Young, but I'm a little partial to Matt Leinart.
Matt Leinart.
He's a very, you know, very. It's funny. I was talking to one of my friends the other day. He's a very underrated, you know, especially since, you know, he had such a bomb career in the NFL. His college career is very underrated. It's very, very underlooked. You know, not only lost two games, you know, two national championships, Heisman Trophy winner 1 year, second runner up the next year. You know, very, very, you know, very accurate in college. I can't say anything about the pros, but, you know, he's had the memorable games. You know, we had the Notre Dame push, you know, Bush push game, and, you know, the national championship blowout over Oklahoma. You know, he's had a very storied career. Like I said, what'd you say, Mike?
I didn't mean to say no. You go ahead.
Yeah, I would. I don't know. I would probably have to look at. I think I might have to go with Cam Newton. I mean, I know he only was in there 1 year, but that 1 year, that boy, you know, he was dominant. You know, like I said, I'm an SC fan, but you know the way Newton, you know, the way Newton dominated, you know, that year, you know, with what he had on that team. And you look at, you know, like I say, even though we're just talking about college, you look at, you know, the amount of those players that transferred, you know, into the pros wasn't that much. You know, it wasn't like they were a football factory like SC or Miami or, you know, even Bama right now. It's just, you know, to do what he did in the SEC, he was really romping through. You know, he was romping through everybody. He really was Superman. And,
he
wrapped it up with a national championship and a Heisman. You know, he pretty much can't beat that.
Got a coach fat contract and coach didn't even.
Yep, number one pick to move.
The contract either.
Yep. I would have to put it on Cam Newton. Who do you think now? And I wish Clausel was on here to hear this part. Who do you think is the top two team of the BCS era?
You know what though. I thought you were going to say something else. I think I do have to go with Alabama. You got a shot at going, you know, 4 for 5. I mean, there's nothing more you can get past with that. Now, you're asking me who had the best players of the BCS era? No doubt it's Miami.
I think it might be Miami for without a fact, but yeah, I mean, I want to get the best team. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, you can't argue with that. I mean, Alabama, what they're doing, the way it's looking, they're probably going to be probably going to be the favorites again this year. You know, they probably could be ranked number one. Without one, they'd definitely be ranked in the top five or top three. Mm-hmm. But, yeah,
if they win the national championship again this year, don't we have to start looking at them as all-time sports teams, period, not even just college football. I mean, you know, like I said, 4 out of 5 championships in a year, that's 1960s Boston Celtics-like, you know, or, you know, 1970s, you know, UCLA basketball-like, you know. That's something amazing, you know, especially for, you know, college, like I said, college football. You know, that's pretty much unheard of right there. Yeah.
Doing it in the competitive SEC.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's, you know, it will be, like I said, I would actually have to, you know, go ahead and pick them too. They put together a great run. You know, you can't even deny it, you know. And, you know, they're putting these guys in the pros. And, they're a juggernaut. Juggernaut in every sense of the word. It's just, you know. Yep.
As long as Nick Saban is there, man, it's not gonna stop. I don't think in that SEC conference right now it's some good coaches there, but I don't think there's a coach there that's close to being his equal.
Well, you hit a lull at some point. You hit a lull at a point. I was telling Mike, you hit a lull at a point. You know what I'm saying? That they even for a year, Bama fell off and they bounced right back. But for a year they fell off. You hit the low because your cup dries up. But you know it's a program that recruits well. They can fill it up easily. But you hit that stale spot sometimes, even if it's for just a year.
Yeah, it seems like I say, you know, recruiting is so important too. in college football. It seems like if you get that one class, you know, they kind of just, you know, even if it's a freshman class, it kind of fills in the spots of your older classes just to make you a more complete team. It seems like that kind of carry you on. And, you know, with Alabama, it seems like they've always been getting that kind of class. You always have a guy like, you know, a T.J. Yeldon guy or Hassan Dixon guy, you know, those guys who come in early and fill in those little spots and just, you know, take the team from a good team to a great team. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, like I say, you know, out of Miami teams and the, you know, USC teams, they kind of have that too. And it seems like, you know, right now that, that Bama is definitely holding that seat. Do you guys see Nick Saban? Do you see him staying at Alabama? Next?
If he moves to the NFL, it'll have to be the right job. The right job would have been somewhere like Cleveland, you know, with Lombardi, who's up there now as a GM, somewhere like that. That would be the right job for Saban. It just have to be the right job, the right opportunity. Otherwise, he's just staying there in Alabama. And another thing is Saban is, you know, let's call it what it is. He's a control freak. He can do his thing at Alabama. It can always be football. You understand what I'm saying? So it's in a small town. You know, there's nothing to worry about. He's taken care of. It's you're at the pinnacle. Why be happier than happy if you're Nick Saban? Because if you go to the NFL, you're going to have to fit in somewhere with your coaching style and with who you are. And you can do that at Alabama.
Yeah, basically he's like Bobby Bowden in Tallahassee.
I was going to say when he said that, when you said Lombardi in Cleveland, I was going to say, though, but then if that said that was a choice, you know, he pretty much, Lombardi, I mean, you know, I guess they, you know, of course, worked together when he was in Cleveland when he was assistant coach, but still, you know, Saban, like you said, is a control freak, so he will have the final say on personnel and everything. Of course, kind of want to be a head coach / GM, so, you know, he wants that control and power. So, I mean, yeah, but I kind of agree. So you think Saban, if we go to the NFL, he would have to probably, you know, coach a small market team. You don't think he can coach like a big city team like, you know, say Dallas, Chicago, or Pittsburgh, those type of on franchises?
Well, you know, like Tech said, you know, this, you know, he's a control kind of guy, you know. And unless he can get in a position, you know, where he's gonna, you know, have, you know, either know the GM or, you know, or he can be the GM himself, you know, or something like that. You have to think that he's just gonna, you know, like I said, he's gonna stay where he is. Basically, he's gonna, you know, like Bowden, you know, like how Bobby Bowden stayed in Tallahassee. You know, if you're making the same salary and you basically run the city as well as, you know, as well as the college, why would you leave? You know, you're winning national championships, you're getting high recruits. You know, stay there. You know, stay there until you're 70. You know, guy. You know,
exactly.
He's not. You know, Nick Saban. He looks like a young guy, but you know, he's 61 years old. So, you know, you got to figure. You know, either he's gonna stay where he is right now, or he's gonna try to jump back to the NFL maybe within a couple of years. But, you know, you're not gonna. You know, I'd say maybe even jump back next year if he is gonna leave. You know, either that or just, you know, this is where he plays out his career. He, you know, been a coach for, you know, the past 30 some years. So. You know,
I was gonna say about two was equal. A guy though, I just thinking, I wish he was in the SEC, and just remember, his team just joined the SEC one in year two. A guy like though, which, you know, his name gonna be floating around again, possibly in NFL, and possibly he might be coaching the NFL next year, is Kevin Sumlin. I think Kevin Sumlin's gonna do something. Maybe if Saban stays, it'll be interesting. If he stays, let's see, he might be a guy that definitely can challenge, you know, that Texas A&M program, because, man.
Yeah, Tex was actually telling me that, you know, was it last week, Tex, we were talking about that?
It was a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, you know, this guy, you know, he's, you know, young coach, has a high
and
program right now.
He's from Alabama, too.
He's an Alabama guy?
Yeah, he's from Alabama.
Oh, okay, yeah, wow. I didn't even know that. You know, like I say, you know,
young
coach, you know, young minority coach, too. You know, has a hot program right now. You know, good coaching experience. Like I said, he very well could, you know, make a jump up, you know, jump to the pros, hopefully jump to the right program. You know, I think, you know, like I said, I think right now he has, you know, he has an opportunity to turn Texas A&M into a power. You know, me and Tex were talking about it the other day. It's like, you know, they only really needed one good, you know, one that one win over Alabama has changed the future of their whole team, seems like.
Yeah.
You know, they just got the number one quarterback recruit. They're going to start putting guys from UT. So,
I think it fueled it up more, but even if they didn't win, it's still, you just seen what he's done. You saw what he did at Houston. I mean, they had that undefeated year, and they didn't want to give him more. And he announced that he's going to the SEC. So, I mean, his track record, what he did to the Houston team, you know, and, you know, what he's doing in Texas.
Yeah, you know,
like,
in terms of stuff, you know, Texas A&M, you know, when you have a banner win, like, against Alabama on that kind of stage, and you come out and have a freshman like Johnny Manziel win the Heisman, it's only going to do wonders for your program. You know, it's going to, like I said, the buzz, I mean, it's the momentum has swung so quick. I mean, it's almost unprecedented. You know, it's the buzz has swung so quick to Texas A&M. It's like, to me, honestly, it feels like if Baylor started becoming good, they might jump over UT too, because, you know, Baylor has been getting recruits lately. What do you think about how the momentum has swung from UT to A&M, Texas?
Well, you know, A&M, they always had talent. UT has had talent and underachieved. A&M has had talent,
yeah,
and they've underachieved to an extent. But now A&M has a coach. They have the coach with the program. They have the assistants. He's really someone's digging in, you know, in recruiting-wise, territory-wise, he's digging in. And, I mean, these kids, that's what they're talking about is Texas A&M. And everybody saw the Bama game, and that was right then. I'm like, man, that's it for UT Austin. That is it.
And, Mac Brown, remember I was telling you on one of our shows last year that I was hearing, I was like, put an end to that, man. Mac Brown, he's going to be under some – or he might be under some heat this coming year. You know, they definitely underperform or not get to the level of Texas style, you know. They might, you know, try to make a change. Well, might have to, or maybe getting somebody, a new coach that's on the rise, because, you know, I guess me and Mac Brown being older, you got a young guy coming in, you pretty much like taking Texas on the map, you know, A&M, so they might have to think of something. Like, I think they missed up with Will Muschamp, because he was going to be the heir apparent coach, but you see he left to go to Florida. They say he was going to be the heir apparent coach in Texas.
Speaking of Big 12 coaches on the hot seat, What's you guys take on Bob Stoops in Oklahoma? I mean, this is a program that's kind of been going on a stagnant downward, you know, I wouldn't say a complete downward spiral, but it's just been stagnant over the past couple of years, and they've still been getting top recruits. You know, this is a program that, you know, they would come out and constantly, you know, out recruit UT in Texas, you know, and they're still getting the guys, but, you know, the performance hasn't been showing on the field. You know, they another school who's lost to A&M. And, you know, is Bob Stoops, if he's not on the hot seat, is his feet starting to get a little bit warm? What do you think, Tex?
He should be, because he talk about somebody else that's underachieved. It's been Stoops. I know they had it's been the BCS win versus Florida State back in 2001. And then you look at OU, you look at Stoops, lost in Fiesta Bowl, lost in Orange Bowl, won this. Lost. You know what I'm saying? It's like 2-9 or something like that. It's ridiculous. If he's not on the hot seat, he should be. Him and Mac Brown.
Who do you think will go first if either one of them goes?
Well, it's Stoops probably, because I mean, they just OU is all, even in season, besides the Texas game half the time, they're always losing big games. They get the BCS bowls and they lose. So that'd be unacceptable anywhere else.
Exactly.
I say Mac Brown go first before Stoops. Remember, Oklahoma was getting in on Texas though for a while. You know, they was beating them, and finally kind of got it going, I guess, after they won their championship. Because remember that year 2000, that 2000 Texas team. Well, I mean, that team to me, even though they won in 05 with Young, that Texas team was talented, stacked, man. And they just, you know, the only question was the quarterback, and then, you know, it was politics on that. But that team should have went to a national championship to challenge that Miami Hurricane
team. What team is that you talking about, Mike?
Remember that team we was freshman year, that thing with Roy Williams, Vasher, all that talent they had? That was fact.
That, that was an old one team, I believe.
That was if Applewhite was playing quarterback.
Yeah, Applewhite and Chris Sales. When they have, I guess everybody went, I guess for politics, saying go with Chris Sales because that's Phil Sales' son. But that Texas team was talented. Like I said, that team to me was just as talented as Miami. If you look on paper, they were talented. You know, some of the draft picks they had, that would have been a heck of a championship between them and Miami. But we know they didn't get it done. That's why I'll say right there. Like, I remember Tex, you kept being critical about it. We like, about Mac Brown with the coaching because look all that talent Texas has.
Yeah, I remember that. I believe we actually all watched that game against Colorado together. And when they got mudded in the basketball championship game.
Yep.
Florida and
Boise. Chris Brown from – I think he ran for almost 200 yards on them cats. But, I don't know. It's weird. Like I say, you know, Mac Brown, he has had some teams there. He has a national championship. But, you know, it's also – It could also be, you know, his national championship. You know, you could put that on Vince Young almost more than anybody. Vince Young, you know, that year, you know, he was Cam Newton that year. You know, with a better supporting cast. You know, because UT's in Texas, they're always going to get, you know, they're always going to have talent. So, you know, because Texas is always going to, you know, put out a high caliber of high school football players. And it just, you know, like Tex said, it just doesn't seem like. Like, I don't know, you know, it's weird. The parallel between the Texas Longhorns and the Dallas Cowboys is amazing. You know, I've never seen a college team that operates almost just like the professional team. You know, for the talent that they have, you know, it's astonishing. And, you know, it seems like both, you know, I've heard both programs operate the same way. You know, I mean, they've gotten, you know, multiple talented players. What'd you say, Tex?
I said that old buddy system.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And you know, it seems like that.
Be friends.
Yeah, I was gonna say really that championship kind of definitely saved Mac Brown because we remember we was hearing things that, you know, some people wanted him out and then thought maybe it's time to bring in someone else, and then you won that national championship, you got a new contract.
Yeah, it's going to, like I said, I think this season is going to be interesting, especially, like I said, since last year to BCS, you know, we're going to see a lot of interesting things happen. It's going to, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of changes at the end of the season. You know, we got a lot of, like I said, a lot of young coaches. You mentioned Kevin Sumlin. We also got Charlie Strong out in Louisville. Do you guys think that he might be making a move anytime soon?
It depends. He might have another year or two there. It depends
how ironic was it that they played Florida in their bowl game and just beat the crap out of it like that? I mean, how ironic is that the coach that they passed up, you know, to put somebody else in the head coaching spot, you know, went to this other school and instantly turned them into a powerhouse, and you know, came back to UF. And just dominated them like that, isn't that? You know, to me, that's almost poetic justice.
It sure is.
Yeah.
I was gonna say this about Stoops, though. I guess you know what I'm saying. I guess in game of coaching, I guess you know in business too. I mean, he's been there long enough, you know, and they haven't really been to the stand of Oklahoma. They've been kind of, you know, not been up there, you know. Like you said, they lost a lot of big games and bowl games. So I think it's probably they might, you know, sometimes it's time for a change. Move on and bring someone else. So, yeah, I think it should be that time, you know, if they don't get something going this year. Because, I mean, it's funny, we brought about Stoops because they were talking about it on the show yesterday about Stoops. So, I mean, hey, they haven't really done nothing, you know, big for a while. So, yeah. I'll say about Charlie Strong, I guess the AD there gave the guy his first shot because, you know, he could have went to Auburn in Tennessee. They were hollering at him, but he decided he was going to stay at Louisville. Of course, they gave him a new contract. I mean, gave him, you know, some more money in years. So he got. I guess he got loyal to that athletic director. Only team I could see him leaving, maybe going to, because he got kind of ties down there. If the UM position opens up, and if Miami is calling him, that's the position, man, he can't pass up.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's Al Golden. It seems like he's kind of found his place in Miami. I hear a lot of people. They like that they're not. You know that he's kind of cleaning up that program, and you know you're not hearing. You know some of the bad things that you might have used to hear about Miami underneath Golden. He's running different football camps down there, and they're starting to get their recruiting back. They just signed Kevin Olsen's little brother. He's one of the top quarterbacks. He's going to be coming there. And, with Duke Johnson, like I said, Miami's future actually looks very bright now that you mentioned that. Stephen Morris, that quarterback. What do you think about the Canes coming up this season, Tex?
I saw a sneak preview of Phil Steele's top 25. It hadn't gone all the way to one yet, but he has the Canes at, I think he was number 25. I had him about 22 or 23 going into the year, but he had him about 25. But, I mean, they're young. They grew last year. They're explosive. I mean, they're very, very explosive playmakers on the offensive side of the ball everywhere. And you try to think about where they would have been had Stephen Morris been the starter from the jump, had they not been messing around with Corey Harris. But I expect Miami to compete this year. They have the wide receivers. They have Phil Dorsett. They have Hearns. They have the quarterback. They have Duke Johnson on defense. They have the safeties, the cornerbacks. They have Figueroa, the incoming freshman, who's probably going to end up being a high first-round pick when he comes out. And they got Denzel Perryman. So, I mean, they got playmakers. They got playmakers in their back seven. The line is underrated. They got playmakers at wide receiver and at running back. So I expect them to try to do a little something and grow this year.
Yeah, it's been Stephen Morris's development. I didn't think that this kid was going to be that kind of quarterback, to tell you the truth. I thought, the way he's come in there, like you said, he should have been starting, since his freshman year. Over the court. Corey Harris, Corey Harris started off good and feels it out. I don't know if it all got to his head but Stephen Morris, he's coming there and he's ACC player of the year candidate for sure, maybe even Dark Horse Heisman candidate coming up this year. He can do some really special things on the field. And when you get a school like Miami and you start getting quarterbacks like that, who playing like that at a high level, recruits are going to flock to you. Your team's going to start doing better. You can revitalize the program very easily around a player like Stephen Morris. Because people are going to want to come there and play with him, and you're going to want to have other quarterbacks that are good. They're going to come up behind him and move right into his seat after he moves on to the next level. Mike, what do you think about that?
I'm still waiting to see on Golden. I guess maybe because of the success that Florida State's back on track with Jimbo Fisher being the head coach, and then with Florida Will Muschamp. So I'm still kind of, I hope Miami does better, but I'm still not sure about Golden.
It's weird. Miami,
they're going to get players, but still, what about the coach? Because, Randy Shannon, he was a good recruiter and he was a coach, but still I felt they didn't give him enough time, and you saw how they let him go, but they were still getting some players.
Yeah.
And some of those players he's having are Randy Shannon's recruits. And Shannon came in
and
had
a lot of Randy Shannon's problems. I hate to point it towards a certain group of players. But that Miami Northwestern, those signees that he brought in, none of them really panned out. They brought in, I believe, about five, except for Sean Spence. They brought in about five-star recruits from Northwestern: Spence, Marcus Fortson, Aldarius Johnson, Harris and Tommy Streeter, and John Quinn seemed like he was the only one to pan out of all those guys. So, you know, that had a lot to do with
Streeter's looking good for Baltimore. He's looking all right for Baltimore right now.
Streeter. He's definitely going to find a place there, you know, especially since they lost Anquan Boldin now. So, you know, you're 6'5" with speed like that. You're gonna, you know, it can jump. You're gonna find a place with somebody. It seems weird though, because it's almost like Florida, you know, even after their recent success, you know, with all these players they lost in the NFL, it seems like they could find themselves kind of at the bottom of the Florida, you know, out of all the big three Florida schools again. You know, with you know, like Mike says, you got, you know, Florida State's gonna be coming back. They got a hot shot quarterback, and Demarius Winston gonna be starting this year. You know, Miami's gonna, you know, on the comeback, and you know, with all the talent that U.S. has lost, really, they might end up being the odd school out this year. So, you know, it's kind of weird how that turned out for them. You know. But anyway, let's transition on here. We're gonna transition on to our NFL part of the show. I want to start it off with something that people have been talking about recently: Washington Redskins. It's been the name of this team for a while now. You got some other teams that use similar, well, some people say they're similar names, like the Florida State Seminoles. Do you guys think that this is offensive and that it should be changed, or that this team, if they're free to do what they want, this is a part of American history and they should keep it the same? What do you think, Tex?
Well, I take the same stance I've always taken on it. Not too much explanation. Redskins, I mean, I'm not Native American, but it's, to me, it's, and let's go ahead and say this, that it's looked at as a pride thing amongst some Native Americans, but not all. And I understand why they feel that it's offensive. I think it's offensive. Any of these teams coming with these names like Redskins or anything else like that, to me, that's offensive. I've never liked it.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, with the professional sports, you know, like you said, there's other teams, Kansas City Chiefs, Atlanta Braves, you know, like I said, Florida State Seminoles, you know, it seems like you got Cleveland Indians, you know, you got a lot of other teams that use that. What do you think about that, Mike?
Well, I mean, I see some of the names, like, I don't think Blackhawks, you know, the Chicago team, but, you know, it's the Blackhawks, but I think what Redskins, what it stands for, you know, I know we had talked about this before. Yeah, it's kind of like they kind of need to change that name. They were talking about it today, well, back in 1940s, where, yeah, maybe that name then, where it is, you know, during that time was different. Well, we're in 2013. Not in 1940s
no more. I think it was racist in 1940. I think it's
still
racist now. You know, I mean, it's, you know.
Not as bad, though. It's not as bad.
Yeah,
but even if it was
like, you know, like something like the Blackhawks or something, that's actually a pride, you know, something that, you know, you might want to take your pride in. But Redskins is actually, you know, it's pretty much a slur that they used to use, you know, towards Indians. That would almost be like, you know, the Boston Tar Babies, or, you know, or the Miami Beaners or something like that, you know. So it's kind of sad because Native Americans are in such a minority. There's not more of an outcry in this country about it, but, you know, it seems like it's something offensive. But, you know, it's like, you know, doesn't seem like there's gonna, you know, they voted on it and voted against changing it, so it doesn't seem like there's gonna be anything they're gonna do about it right now.
And Roger Goodell supported it when they met with Congress, where they're saying to defend it, you know, keep the name Redskins. I know I was listening to
exactly.
I was watching Around the Horn today, not Around the Horn, PTI, and really Michael Wilbon, you know, he knows Roger Goodell, you know, he was really very disappointed about his stance on that. you know, you're the NFL commissioner, you decide to go with it. I mean, we all guess because the money it brings, you know, but the name, I guess, the logo and all that. But, man, it's just, that's an offensive word.
Exactly, yeah, it really is.
So we taking a stand.
Okay.
I mean, we taking a stand. I mean, I know we're a sports show, but we taking a stand on other things of equality in this country, you know, how you feel about same-sex marriages and all that, and that's a big deal. So, I mean, that's the same thing. That's kind of racial discrimination to a particular group or culture or race.
Exactly. I'm really glad you brought that up, Mike, because that's kind of going to segue us into our next topic. A couple of weeks ago, Adrian Peterson was asked some questions about gay marriage and would he mind having a gay teammate in the locker room with him. And he gave some answers. You know, he said he's really not with gay marriage. You know, he said he would feel uncomfortable about having a gay teammate in the locker room, I mean, in the shower. But he also said that he would welcome a gay teammate. And, you know, I put it up on Facebook. It seems like a lot of these questions are only being asked towards minority. A lot of these controversial questions, it's really weird if you notice. You always hear them asking a question about a hot topic subject, you know, gay marriage, marijuana smoking, you know, their personal lives, their kids, you know. They always, you know, it seems like, you know, because I don't know, maybe they think they'll get a hotter answer. You know, somebody's, you know, when Ozzie Guillen was the coach, you know, when he was a baseball coach, somebody would always ask him some controversial question about it. You know, you always ask him about other players and things like that, you know. And it seems to me, you know, when they ask Adrian Peterson that, you know, ask him about, you know, having a gay teammate is one thing, but ask him about gay marriage, that's, you know, that's personal. You know, and everybody, oh, well, Chris Cooley was his teammate, and he was outstanding. You know, he was an outspoken advocate of it, but they didn't ask Jared Allen that. And, you know, from the type of guy we've, you know, seen from, you know, seeing with Jared Allen, a hunting, you know, advocate, you know, seemed like he's a conservative kind of guy. I can almost guess what his answer was going to be if they would ask him that kind of question. And it just, you know, it doesn't seem like they ask guys like Peyton Manning and those kind of guys, those type of questions. It always seems like they say for minorities trying to get a spicy answer. What do you think about that, Tex?
It's just I think it's normally I don't put too much into it. It is kind of funny that more minority players get asked that question more so than guys like Tom Brady or even Peyton Manning or even Drew Brees. I think it's more than anything, I think it's just up to the player to handle that situation accordingly. You know, Adrian Peterson can say, you know, we're just answering football questions. Adrian Peterson can get asked that, and he can be like, I have no problem with marriage equality, just like anybody else. But as far as minorities being faced with those kind of questions, you know, that's, you know, people want to, you know, people is, this is, you know, it's a judgmental society. It's a society that plays off stereotypes and you know, the institution is going to always be subtle with how they do. They're going to try to pick at the players and see if these guys are talking, how they feel about different issues, and you know, they'll. I mean, there's never any end to trying to test the mettle of these athletes, especially the minorities, when it comes to the media, and it comes to issues like gay rights, just civil issues, civil rights, stuff like that.
What do you think, Mike?
I was gonna say they asked Andrew Luck about that. He said he don't have a problem with, you know, having a gay teammate or anything like that, so they did come to him on that. I mean, in this day and age, I mean, gotta be kind of be careful. Even people that's athletes are careful what you say on this, especially this topic, because, you know, and like for that question, I think that is kind of personal. How you feel about gay marriages? I mean, regardless of your response, if you say yeah, no, it's gonna still be out there. So for me, I would just say, hey, that's that individual business, you know, like, hey, whatever. I would just say, I won't have a problem with having a gay teammate. All that other stuff, that's personal. That's personal prerogative. That's all, about playing football and talk about football related stuff, not getting into people's personal lives, So really, he should have just said that's kind of personal. I don't need to go there on that. This is just, we're here talking about the Minnesota Vikings and talking about football. We're not here talking about, about how you feel.
Please leave your message for 4693867292.
So, I was gonna say, we pretty much, it's pretty much about football. I have to talk about equality, marriage equality, gay, lesbian type stuff. These athletes got to be smarter on it.
Yeah, it just, I agree with you on that. You do have to have them. Hold on 1 second.
I'm back. Sorry about that.
Okay, no problem.
You do have to have them
be smarter about the comments they make. But it just, like I said, it just seems weird to me that, you get a guy like Antonio Cromartie about his baby's moms, but, you never hear a reporter ask Tom Brady about his baby's mama, and, she's a famous actress, you never hear them ask about his wife, and she's a supermodel, you never hear them go, how's things going with you and Giselle, or, what happened with you and the actress chick, you broke up with. And it just, like I say, to me, that seems weird. We have Clauzel Mathis. He's coming in right now. He's going to join us. Clauzel, you in there?
Yeah, I'm here. You hear me?
What's good?
Nothing much. We were just covering how it seems like minority players are asked more controversial questions than their counterparts. I was saying, you don't ever hear nobody asking Tom Brady about his baby's mother, even though she's a famous actress. And furthermore, you don't even hear them ask about his wife, and she's a supermodel. And her, the most well-known supermodel on earth, supposedly. You don't hear them asking any personal questions to him. But, it seems like, you'll have a lot of minorities being asked those kind of questions. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, it's kind of it's a bigger issue. I mean, the media is always threw the black man under the bus. That's just a given. Can you hear me clearly?
Yeah.
The media is always throwing the black African American males under the bus, put them in a negative light. And I think with the creation of the internet, and I think with the creation of with Barack Obama being president, I think racial tensions have really increased in this country, and the media is really saturating the airwaves, either radio, TV, newspaper, with negative portrayals of black men, either black men going to jail, black men complaining, black men beaten, black men being a cancer to the team. So the media is just bombarding with those images all the time, with those messages all the time. And they're very creative on how they do that. It is what it is. I mean, it's a racial component to it. Let's just put it that way. It's a racial component to it.
Well, do you think maybe they should get their entourages or somebody, maybe they might even need to hire a coach, like somebody like Farnsworth Bentley or somebody, let's look at, for example, the situation with Chad Johnson, in the court role.
I'm glad you're bringing that to his attention.
Yeah, he slapped his, his judges, and everybody jumped on him and this and that. Even though after I watched the full tape, what really happened was the judge was actually praising his lawyer about how good his lawyer was, and Chad Johnson, slapped his butt like, good job, yeah, you are good. He didn't smile or say a joke, and then the rest of the audience in there started laughing, and the judge took offense to their laughing, and for some reason put it on Chad Johnson. And then of course she gave him 30 days in jail for that. And you have people that had no problem with it. Yeah, he should have died. He deserved it. This and that. And, Willie was out hearing the full story about it. And I'm wondering, do you think maybe some of these guys, they should maybe have, I don't know, like I say, maybe somebody's entourage to watch them, or Is that not what these entourages are for? What do you guys think about that?
Well, I mean, you could do that. I mean, still, even with the entourage, the point is they're going to come up with something to put you in, to put you under the bus. I mean, either a situation like with Chad Ochocinco, Michael Vick, and the dog fighting. I mean, they're going to the media will create a situation out of anything. I mean, you will be thrown on the bus for anything. I mean, I predict something like that will happen to Barack Obama. Something will happen with him. They will come up with some sort of situation. It could be minuscule, and they're going to blow it out of nothing. So is the fact that, you know, should he have a publicist or a somebody to, you know, prevent him from doing these things? He could do that. You know, there's some obvious things that he shouldn't be doing. He should not be spanking a woman's – I mean, spanking a dude's behind in courtroom. He should have known better than that. I mean, I think the judge overreacted, but he should have known better than that. But let's just say if he was clean, he had a clean record or whatnot, they will still come up with some situation. Trust me, they will come up with some situation, you know, to either portray him as not a team guy or he doesn't speak up for himself. It's just some sort of situation that they're going to put him in. And that's just the life of a black man in this country, you know. So I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Well, also, okay, let's look at it like this. Do you think that maybe some of these athletes put themselves in that position? Like, let's look at Pac-Man Jones' recent arrest. He was arrested for assault of a woman. And if you actually look at the video, this woman either hit him or threw a drink in his face or whatever it was, she enacted the situation. And one of his friends was right there, who I think his friend, you know, once they even started getting into some friction, his friend should have pulled him away immediately. Adam, Pac-Man, let's get out of here. But that didn't happen, and you know he reacted. You know we're humans. You react. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. You know, and he reacted, and you know, and he went to jail for it. I mean, do you think that maybe, like I say, in a society where there's always a camera watching you, or there's, you know, people know who you are, and you know, do you think that maybe, you know, some of these guys, like I say, you know, did they almost look for trouble almost? What do you think about that, Tex?
Well, this is the woman threw a beer bottle at him. I mean, you can't by definition he was assaulted. I heard people say that he could have just went to go and get the police, and that he shouldn't have been such and such. But wasn't he at a Reds game? Wasn't he at a baseball game?
I don't know. It looked like I just saw that he was outside of like a bar area.
I thought he was at a baseball game though. Maybe he was coming out, but that's assault. By definition, that's assault. You know, the girls wanted to take a picture with him. You can imagine, you know, who and what they were. They wanted to take a picture with him. He said no. So, you know, who is this guy? Who does he think he is? And they were probably drunk, so you throw the beer bottle at him. Can't do that. That's assault. I thought it was pretty funny. She got slapped. Okay, you know, thank goodness she didn't come across that wrong one. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think sometimes people underestimate the fact that, you know, they're dealing with professional athletes whose job is to keep their body in the best possible shape. I'm a grown man. I wouldn't want Pac-Man Jones hitting me. So, you know, even though he's only, you know, relatively, you know, little compared to me, but I wouldn't want no professional athlete putting hands on me, somebody to work out every day. What do you think about that, Mike? Do you think that it's provoked or some of these guys, you know? What do you think?
But, I mean, somebody needs to educate these guys. I mean, nobody's going to educate these guys in terms of a black man. Somebody needs to educate these guys. If you're a black man in this country, you're going to be under attack. I mean, either it's going to be some way they're going to try to attack you for you to react, and, you know, and then they'll be like, oh, look at what this guy did. You know, he's a criminal or whatever the case is. You're going to be constantly under attack. You're going to be egged on to be provoked. So you got to understand to keep your composure, maintain your discipline, and move on from the situation. That's what a guy needs to come into NFL and tell them that. You know, there needs to be guys to do that. You know, guys that are cognizant of that. And I think a lot of brothers in this country are not cognizant of that. Or the guys that are teaching them that are not cognizant of that. So it's going to perpetuate the problem that we see today, you know.
I agree.
What do you think, Mike?
I mean, I didn't read the whole story. I think I'm like, dang, it goes Pac-Man Jones and then hearing about the song because it goes back to his breath. So he might Cincinnati might decide to let him go. But I was gonna say too, like you know, I thought I just said that they might, you know, hey, they don't need all this. It's just like how many chances he's gonna get though, you know, it goes back to his past. I was gonna say like, well, what type of place was this? Where was he at? When I first, I didn't even want to read it because I figured, okay, here we go again.
Yeah, same old.
I agree, like, you know, wherever he was with his friends, you know, I guess, like you said, you're going to yak someone through a, I didn't know he got, you know, a woman through a beer bottle at him.
Yeah,
his
friend. I mean, what was the ethnicity of this woman? Why did she throw a
beer bottle? Looked like she was white, maybe Latina or something. You know, you could, like I said, you could definitely tell she was fair skinned. You know, had a pretty hair. Like I said, basically the scene, if he was, they were at, like, it looked like he was outside of some type of bistro or something like that, and there was an outside patio, and him and his friend were walking by, and you could see somebody call him over to take a picture, and it looked like he took a picture with somebody, and it looked like somebody else maybe asked him to take a picture, and he said no or something like that, and he, I don't know whether words were exchanged, but next thing you know, you see the woman reach across with her beer and hit him or pour, you know, do whatever, you know, it looked like she hit him, you know, and then they say, you know, he fires one off at her in response. And then his friend grabs him and, you know, and they walk off.
It's that privilege. You know, like, you know? Well, you can throw a beer at Adam Jones because, you know, he is who he is. And then there's that, you know, there's that privilege. So,
well, you know, like I said, I agreed it was self-defense, but, you know, Jason Whitlock, he wrote an article a couple of years ago. It was right after Sean Taylor was murdered, you know, about the, you know, he's talking about the black KKK and how a lot of times we, you know, we treat ourselves like we're our own KKK. And he said that it's not... A lot of times it's not that we're hanging out. It's where we're, you know, it's not like a lot of times these athletes out of party and all. It's where they're doing it and who they're doing it around. It's like, you know, you can't take, you know, your Bentley or your, you know, your $100,000 chain into your old hood and not expect something to happen, you know, or take it around people. You know, basically saying, you know, once you become a certain class of person, which is a rich person, you can hang around other rich people that aren't as prone to certain types of behavior. And I kind of noticed that if you look at most of these incidences that happen with these guys, it's usually in a club. You know, it's usually when you're in a mixture of different classes of people. You know, it's usually in a club, a strip club, you know, in an area where you wouldn't even think that one of these guys, you know, that a regular millionaire would be at, you know, concert, something like that, amazing, you know, something amazing happens, somebody tries to snatch somebody's chain or, you know, some girl makes some type of accusation, and it just seems like it's the same old, you know, like a broken record almost. So, I mean, do you think that maybe these guys should learn to, you know, to pretty much either hang around their own or park, you know, like, you know, some guys have even built clubs in their own basement for their houses. You know, just, I mean, you got to be on extra guard. What do you guys think about that?
I mean, it depends who you're going to guard with, man. Like I said, and it goes back to what I was just saying earlier. If you're a brother in this country, it doesn't matter if you're in the club. It doesn't matter if you're around a bunch of rich people. You're going to be under attack. If you're a brother, and especially if people know you have money and know that you're pretty intelligent, or if you're not that intelligent, they're going to really attack you. They're going to do things to provoke you. It doesn't matter what situation you're going to be in. Trust me. It's not. Look what T.O. and Chad Johnson, they lost all their money. They didn't do it at a club or anything like that. I mean, I don't know. It's just... they're trying to get Tiger Woods. You think Tiger Woods hangs out in places like this?
No.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. Some of those are you know, exceptional cases. But I mean, even in general, even if it's not a physical assault or anything like that, even with some of the women that they meet, you know, that these guys end up getting pregnant, you know, it's like, I mean, you know, it's like, okay, if you hang around a place where hood rats are, you got to expect you're going to pick up a hood rat, and you know, she's going to do what hood rats do. To get pregnant and get child support, you know
that's not just the hood rats, Mike. That's all of them. That's all. That's not literally just hood rats, Matt.
I was gonna add this too. What Mike was saying. I mean, even if not the people we ran with money, just like what people that's doing something. I would say, if you, of course, things change when you have money and you know you're that type of status. Hang around with some people that you know on that level or trying to strive to that level where gigging with somebody that's going to constantly be on that same stuff that was on before
exactly.
you establish your status. That's what I was going to say, too. So you got to guess, of course, when you're being successful and stuff and heading to that level, I guess you kind of got to be careful who you know who's doing something, who's not, of being careful who you hang out with and around your surroundings. Because some people can break
look,
you down,
okay,
you
know? Look what I'm saying. Look at Donovan McNabb. He wasn't in no bad situation, but look how they try to portray him. They try to portray him as a guy that didn't speak up for himself. So when you do take the high road, when you do make the right decisions, they're going to portray you as somebody that's passive, that's weak. So it's a lose-lose situation in regards to the media. That's the point I'm trying to get y'all guys to.
That's very true, brother. I've noticed that too. Guys like you said, like a Donovan McNabb type, you know, even if you look at, you know, even if you look at Troy Aikman, you know, guys that are kind of quiet, you know, who you don't see out a lot, you know, they try to view them as, you know, as passive kind of guys. Even like I said, there was even gay rumors going on around McNabb. I don't even know if he's married or not, but there were gay rumors going on around him, you know, just because he's not out asking. Would you say
they never said anything about Troy Aikman being a passive guy. They used to say that about McNabb. They said McNabb was a very passive guy.
Like I said, I don't know. I kind of heard some of the same things about Aikman, though. You know, remember
you were saying about when Vince Young and Jason Campbell came to Week, how they're going to portray you, how they act toward the stigma of the black quarterback. And then, you know, it's funny that you mentioned about Donovan McNabb because he was saying about, you know, RG3, think RG3 needs to just, you know, kind of calm down now and chill out after just coming back from ACL injury, just working to get, you know, into football shape and be ready. He said if you need to have some advice, you know, me and my old man, you know, we could talk to you and your father about this because of some things that he's doing that, you know, he shouldn't probably be putting himself out there. And some people are kind of saying, well, you know, RG3, you know, he got his own way doing this and that. But shoot, Donovan McNabb, we all know, been the most scrutinized, you know, quarterback in NFL over the past 10, 12 years. And, you know, and of course, being an African-American quarterback.
He made a good point, though. Yes, he has kept his nose clean, though. And that's another thing you brought that up. It's funny because when he tried to give that advice to RG3, whether it was right or wrong, a lot of people viewed that as him, you know, being a hater or being jealous of RG3, you know, and it's kind of weird because, you know, on the one hand, people always say that, yeah, you know, some of these older cats should come and speak to some of the newer cats. But then, you know, when you have this man try to speak out to this guy, you know, everybody viewed it as him being jealous of, you know, or being a hater or try to put himself back in the spotlight or whatever, you know. And like I said, to me it seemed like, you know, he was just trying to give him some, you know, some honest advice, you know, get yourself healthy,
you
know.
And RG thinks that took that advice too, because he's going to be next on the list. Trust me, mark my word, he's next on the list. They're going to build him up, and they're going to start some sort of something about him. Friction between him and the coach. He's a passive guy. He's chauvinistic. You know how, I mean, they're going to come up with something. That's the point. They're going to come up with something.
Like Michael Vick, he's like way even before the dog incident, and then Cam Newton, you know, how they kind of say, well, they thought he might have had an overrated year, this and that, and now you kind of don't really hear much about where he was going to be the big thing, but now all the attention is on RG3.
Yeah, Vick, like I said, I don't know. Vick, he brought that stuff on himself with that dog fighting. Cam Newton, you know, like
I'm
you
saying,
said, he was a young kid when he went through his trouble or whatever, and he tried to turn himself back around. I was going to say,
it was before the dog fight. Remember, before it was pretty saying, is he good at what he is, and he's that mobile quarterback, he don't have the accuracy, can he do this, can he run the West Coast offense, all that type of stuff. Remember, that was like before.
That was him being critical of him, but like I say, I would have put those same criticisms out about him. You know, I mean, Vic, you know, I think this dude, it's been 12 years since Michael Vick was drafted. You know, and he's just now learning to carry the football that he said in this past offseason. You know, you got to think, when somebody says that in the public, you got to kind of think about what that, you know, like I say, some of these guys, the criticism is undue, but some of them, they bring it on themselves by doing and saying stuff like that. You know, 12 years and you're just now learning how to carry the football. And then, you know, when he came out of jail and he, you know, he had that good season, I think he said that was his first year of really learning how to read plays or something, you know, he said, made another similar statement, you know, something like that. To me, that's just, you know, that's okay. Maybe you're not caring about the craft that you're doing. And, you know, maybe you need to, you know, put some more time in instead of doing whatever else you were doing. You know, but I think Clauzel made a good point. You know, it does seem like they're trying to put our RG3, you know, there's a lot of spotlight around him right now. And hopefully he, you know, hopefully he heeds some of that advice that Donovan McNabb was trying to put on him. And, you know, and at least, you know, shelters himself or watches out.
It's they're waiting. I think Allen Iverson said something very, very, very profound. They're waiting. They are waiting for him to make a mistake, like with LeBron, or the media is waiting on them to make a mistake. And then, I mean, they're going to try to characterize LeBron. They're saying he's, you know, he's not a leader or something. You know, it is what it is. I mean,
today they say, yeah, well, LeBron, they lose the finals, he's going to be like Wilt Chamberlain. Yeah, and he can't do it, you know, with the team and stuff like that. It's like, man.
Well, like, do you think that that's just the way that the sports media is? Like, you know, like I said before, it seems like the sports media and media in general right now has a Twitter memory. Whatever's on Twitter, you know, whatever's hot, you know, they try to get the hot, you know, this on, you know, then they'll forget something. You know, like I said, you know, it's a football show. We talk about LeBron. LeBron, you know, he can win game, you know, he can lose game one, and he's the worst ever. Then he wins games two, and he's back to being the best. Now he lost game three, and he's the worst ever again. You know, and it seems like with him, I don't know, he's actually kind of held himself off in for his private life for the most part. But it seems like the guys that do that, they try to project their on the field persona into their private life. You know, like, oh, he's arrogant and this and that. And it's like, you never seen this man out, you know, doing nothing in the streets, or, you know, or he's a punk, or, you know, it's like, you know, you don't hear, you know, like I said, LeBron is pretty much kept his private life quiet. You don't hear about him, you know, being in the club and, you know, popping bottles and, you know, this and that. But, you know, it seems like people try to take their, you know, their dislike about him on the court, you know, and put it towards his private life. Kind of like how, you know, they'll try to call some players thugs, or, you know, even though we know what the connotation behind that really means. You know, this guy, he's just a thug. And it's like, you all know that dude, you know. Just because, you know, he made a nasty hit on somebody, he means he's a thug now. You know, he can't just be a hard-nosed player, you know. And it seems like they do a lot of that now.
Yeah, I'm just saying, because, like, really, even though, of course, you know, you have your preference and too, you know, not liking the Heat or not liking just being real, you know, I don't like the Heat, but I don't dislike LeBron James. I mean, what's not to dislike about the guy? Like you said, he's just not a guy, you know, there's nothing negative about the guy. You know, you're not, even on the court when he plays, you don't see him being that type of guy, like, oh, I can't stand him, he's a bully or this and that. So it's like, they're just coming up ways to just finding something, you know, to say, well, you know, like you said, what's hot is hot, but it's just, I think.
Well, why does it, I mean, is it, you know, like we said, we've hit on race. Is it really just as simple as it is race? I mean, is that what, because, I mean, it seems like I said, it seems like sometimes you get a player like Phillip Rivers and everybody, oh, he's fired up, or he's, you know, or get a Peyton Manning guy, he's really into it. You know, but then you might get a black quarterback does the same thing, and he's showing off, or he's arrogant. You know, is it really just as simple as race, or maybe, you know, or sometimes we look too much into that. What, you know, how much do you guys think that really has, you know, on sports in general? Is it still really there, that prevalent, and people just maybe choose not to look at it like that?
Not much. So I don't know. I don't know any other explanation. One fiery guy is another fiery guy, isn't he? Regardless of the color of skin, what's the difference?
Yeah, I mean, my point is, I mean, and I've tracked the media ever since Barack Obama got elected. I mean, the black male has been on unleashed attack since Barack Obama was elected. You know, that Dennis Rodman thing where he went to, what is it, North Korea or something like that? That was a joke, man. That was an attack on the black man.
Yeah,
you know, and then the Jason, whatchamacallit guy, Jason, I don't know, what's his name? The guy that came out, you know. That's another thing, you know. I mean, look at the resentment towards Floyd Mayweather Jr., you know. I mean, he's a representation of black male masculinity. I mean, when you have a situation where you got a guy who's independently making money, You know, he's not going to sit up here and be bossed around by anybody, and he's very arrogant, very confident. They don't like that. You can see America's reaction towards him. They can do what they're doing, whatever they can to, for him to lose the boxing match. They're begging for this Alvarez guy.
It's funny you mentioned that. I told somebody the other day, I said, isn't Floyd Mayweather, isn't really he just our Muhammad Ali, you know, in terms of arrogance and brashness? And for some reason, back then, you know, maybe it's because we were so oppressed, people loved it. But now it's, you know, people are crucifying this dude. But isn't he doing the same stuff Ali was doing, saying he's the best and he can beat this cat and he's out? You know what I mean? It's, you got to self-promote yourself. I mean, isn't that all what this is? But for some, you know, some reason they want us to be quiet now, you know?
Yeah, it's a situation where if you're not dependent on somebody, if you're not dependent on somebody to give you money, and usually that person you're dependent on is not the same race as you, if you're dependent on that person, it's okay. That's a problem. It's fine, you know, because, you know, they can cut that money supply. But when you're in a situation where with Floyd Mayweather, where he's independent, you know, he can do whatever he wants to, whenever he wants to, nobody can boss him around, and he's the best at what he does, that's a threat. That's a threat. That shows independence, and it's a threat, and people don't like to see that. You know, that's the point I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what separates him from somebody like a LeBron James. You know, LeBron James, you know, he's very welcome, but at the end of the day, the people are paying him, and they could cut that money
exactly.
any day. They can cut it any day. So, and that's what happened with Chad Ochocinco and T.O. They cut the money, and look at them. They're broke. So,
yeah.
I mean, and that's the thing. And that's why Clarence can't speak out, because, you know, the persons that's paying the money, you know, can cut you any day. If they make you, they can break you. So, I mean, that's how it is.
And that's very interesting, because I brought it up the other day to one of my friends. I said, if they can ask Adrian Peterson what he thinks about gay marriage, why can't they ask him about what he thinks about all these black kids being killed in Chicago, or gun violence, or, you know, or something important, you know? It seems like, you know, they choose the controversies that they want to ask him. And, it's weird. I never thought about it until you just now said that, Clavel. It's true. It seems like the guys that can promote themselves, and it's mostly boxers, because boxers, you know, boxing, pretty much you're on your own, you know, starting all the way from Jack Johnson in the early part of the century to Ali to Mayweather now. They've always been the most outspoken guys because they can say what they want. But these team athletes, they get fined. You know, they can have their contracts cut. You know, endorsement deals can go down the toilet, you know, from saying what they want to say. So it seems like they're a little bit more tight-lipped.
I was going to say that when you hear about Chad Ochocinco, he's broke. When you hear about that, though, Carvel, I know that's kind of awesome.
Yeah, he has money issues. He has child support payments out of the behind, and he has the he has money issues, and then his thing with his OCN network or something like that, it ain't going all that well. So,
they were Evelyn. Yeah, I guess with that, they probably don't want, you know, him to be the representative of that. That's what that
looks like. Well, now that we focused on these two, let's swing it back over to, you know, are Chad Ochocinco or him or Terrell Owens, are they ever going to be in the NFL again, either one of them? What do you think, Lex?
I don't think so. I think they're done. I think the speed is gone. When the speed is gone, then you're gone.
Yeah, they're done.
Yeah.
And you know, and I think, and it's sort of a sad situation, because I think what they should have done, and I think a lot of these athletes aren't thinking about this, and they should have done this privately. I mean, they should have invested into their community. I mean, that's the thing. They should have invested into their community. Not necessarily give people any money. We're not talking about that, you know, but, like, get the best people, get the best business people in their community, and they should invest in their community to build their community, because the community is going to take care of them, you know. Well, hopefully they will.
I mean, I was going to say, T.O., did some type of investment. I was reading, like, a while back on some real estate, but that didn't go well.
Right, but
look what happened to the real estate market in general. You can tell that wasn't going to happen. Fazil is saying more about is you know, is putting, like I say, putting more of the money invested back into the community, trying, you know, and getting a bigger outturn on it. And that's more of a cultural thing, unfortunately, with black people. You look at 80% of the black dollar is spent instead of going, you know, instead of being invested and going into something else. 80% of our money is outsourced to somewhere else. And that's always kind of bothered me, too. Even it seems like, especially a lot of these former athletes, even if it was, you know, to open up you know, you don't hear a lot of these, you know, a football academy or something, you know, something like that. Something
yeah.
like how Deion was trying to do. You know, and it seems like when they do it, it was successful. You know, we had Kevin Johnson before he became the mayor. He, you know, he did it out here with Sac High, and they're one of the top basketball schools in the country right now. You know, and you know, he you know, it was closed down. He reopened it back up as a charter school. And, you know, and like I said, one of the top schools in the country, and that ended up helping him become mayor of the city, you know, and it just, you know, I don't know. Do you think it's, maybe because these guys maybe don't have as much money as we think or you know, what do you think could be behind that, Claudio?
Well, no, they want to live the fancy lifestyle. They see the guys on TV. You got to understand all this is connected. You see the music that we listen to and all the music that we listen to is, you know, brothers, they're pretty much minstrel shows. They're brothers, you know, talking about how much women they got, how much money they have, what type of cars they have, what type of jewelry they have, what type of houses they have. And, you know, and the athletes hear that growing up, and when they get that money, they're going to try to emulate what those rappers do. And then
but
obviously
why is it, I mean, it seems like even with the rookie symposium and these cautionary tales, like we're talking about T.O., you know, you got the 30 for 30 broke. It's like, what is it getting into these guys' heads that this isn't going to last forever? To me, it's the most rock, unless they're just completely brain dead. It's like, you know, to me, it's the most, you know, it's the most redundant thing that always seems to happen to these athletes.
Well, I mean, I don't know. It just depends what they invest in. I mean, they're not. I mean, what can they invest in? You know, mutual funds, CDs. I mean, it's tough to save money and still, you know, live a certain lifestyle because your money depreciates. So I don't know. The only way I know in order to not be sort of broke when you finish is if you're on the good side with some people, you know, somebody's going to hook you up, or if you don't invest into your own community because your cash is going to depreciate over time. I mean, it depreciates in half after 15 years. So I don't know if there's a solution to that. People say the solution is saving your money. You can't save your money and you're going to maintain your lifestyle. If you have $40 million, 15 years down the road, that $40 million is going to be $20 million and while you're spending it, you know what I mean? It's going to dwindle over time. So, I mean.
If you have $40 million, you're not going to live like you only have, you know, $500. You're going to live like you got $40 million. That's for sure. You worked hard.
Yeah.
You're going to want to. What'd you say, Tex?
I said, I'm going to go ahead and take off because I got a few things I need to do.
Okay, no problem.
All right,
fellas.
Cool, man.
Yep. All right. But, yeah, that's, you know, like I said, to me, that's, you know, it's a major underlying problem, especially with a lot of these poor stars. Investments are hard to do. You know, it's not easy like people think. You know, you just invest, you know, and I'm going to invest in Microsoft, and, you know, the next thing you know, you get a lot of money. I think, you know, it's a combination of both. You have to be smart. You know, I think that's just it. You have to make smart decisions. And some of the decisions these guys just make, you know, like I said, I think the first one is when a lot of these people put their money completely in the hands of these financial advisors and these accountants and stuff like that. You know, and that's a lot of the times, you know, especially during the 30 for 30, that's what we were hearing. Well, I gave my money to this guy and he invested in this, and this. And it's like, whenever you let somebody have complete power over your money like that, you know, bad things can happen. It's not their money, so they're not going to look at it, you know, as their money. They're going to look at it as your money. It's just a job for them. You know, you know, for some reason, like I say, it seems like these athletes, they just don't get that, you know, and it'll be the same story over and over again, and it's sad. What'd you say, Mike?
You got to be careful, too, of doing it, just giving your money like that. You got to have, knowing that this person, you fully trust this person, like, yo, I know everything about him, know his history, his background, everything, I'm getting things done with instead of just, okay, of doing it, especially when it comes to money, or if you're going to try that person, you know, choose a little sum. Don't give a half of it. You know, let's say maybe give that person maybe, let's test it out, maybe $500, $100, see how it goes with the investment, see how dividends go first before you go high. Start low first.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like I said, it has to do a lot about, you know, what Claudio said to these guys. You know, they look at the music videos and they see all the bling bling And, you know, after a while, they have to realize that that can't, you know, that can't be their life. You know, you can live a very comfortable life, but, you know, people need to realize how easy it is to become broke. And it's funny because most of these people come from abject poverty of being broke already. So you figure that would be, the, you know, that would be their worst nightmare is to be broke again. But, you know, a lot of them are, you know, they end up right back there. What, they, what was it, 80% or 50% end up losing all their money?
Yeah, about 80.
Yeah.
About to be 80.
I was going to say, also, too, they look at those videos, they don't know that, man. A lot of that stuff in those videos, some of that stuff is just, like, rent. It's not even, they don't even own all that stuff. Like, you know,
oh, yeah, exactly.
all those videos, they got to pay down and that, so they don't have all that.
Yeah, that statistic, though, 80%, that's just, to me, that's astonishing. That's, you know, that's scary. You figure they would at least set up some type of retirement account. Anyway, let me switch subjects back here to everybody's favorite subject. The man of the century, Mr. Tim Tebow, is signed with
the New England Patriots.
What do you guys think about Tebow and the Patriots? Mike, go ahead.
I found out from our good old Mr. Clausell. He didn't want to tell me the news about it. When he said the Patriots, I already knew. I wasn't surprised because of Josh McDaniels and, you know, Belichick. Maybe, you know, figuring something out, utilizing him. We all know he's not going to be the starting quarterback, and he's not going to be the backup. And, wait, what, the Patriots don't have nothing to lose. How many draft picks they have coming in next year. So, hey, it's worth the gamble. If they want them, they can have them.
Do you think that this is going to be healthy for the Patriots as a team, though? You think there's going to be, you know, some sort of upheaval? And maybe not from the team, of course, because they're not going to want Tebow to start over Brady. But, you know, I put it on Facebook. Are we going to see if Brady has a bad game? Are we going to see people –
they're gonna have him take place of Brady, and he's gonna take Brady's place in about
this dude's name, Maya Mallett. They said maybe if he comes out and he produced, maybe that, you know, gives them more opportunity, maybe looking to trade Ryan Mallett.
But this is just another example. And I don't even want to bring a racial component into this. You know, I'm trying my best not to, but I'm just going to say this. I mean, I'm trying to think of a guy who is kind of an upstanding, who is on the same level as a Tim Tebow, that it's all about religion. I mean, Sean King or I don't know, who's a very religious football player, I'm trying to think. But the point
he's not very religious, but we could throw Donovan McNabb in the same seat.
Yeah, but would the media be all on trying? Would there be media pressure to get this guy back? McNabb back? Would there be media pressure to get Donovan McNabb back?
Definitely not. That's a good point.
No, Sean King. Okay, look, for example, Tim Tebow was a winning quarterback at Denver. He was like 7-4 or something like that. Sean King did the same thing for Tampa for 1 year. I don't know if y'all were here that time when the Bucs went to the NFC Championship game. They were like, they almost got to the Super Bowl and they lost to St. Louis in the AFC Championship game. I mean, the NFC Championship game. I don't know if y'all remember that. You remember that?
Yeah,
it was like in 2000. True. You remember that? Y'all remember that? And Sean King, they were on a run. Sean King was the quarterback, and then everybody was like,
he was playing good too. He wasn't just, you know, it just wasn't a defense. He was actually playing nice.
Well, I wouldn't say he was playing nice. I mean, he had very comparable statistics as Tim.
Well, yeah, not good. I mean, not good. You know, he wasn't 47% like Tebow, basically. You know.
Yeah, but they were trying to say, man, get that guy out of there. And then Brad Johnson came in the next year. They were like, get that guy out of there, man. I mean, the media was like, get this guy out of here. He can't play. And all of a sudden, Tim Tebow does the same thing almost, or even worse, you can even say. And all of a sudden, the media is like, he's a force of competitive nature. You know, oh, thank Tebow.
Is it racial, or do you just think it's just Tim Tebow's persona? So we have seen other white players who haven't got this treatment before. So we have seen other white quarterbacks who haven't gotten this kind of treatment. You know, I put it on Facebook. I think Tim Tebow needs to go into politics. I think he could be governor of Florida like that. You know,
I think it's just this guy. I think it's his personality combined with, you know, the way that he was winning in college. You know, it's just something endears him to people for some reason. Like I say, even though I don't like him as a quarterback, I like him as a person. You know, I mean, like I said, I'm pretty sure he's a swell guy. You know, but I mean, I'm pretty sure there might be a racial aspect to it. You know, because there is in a lot of sports. But like I said, I also think it has a lot to do with his persona in general. You know, he's very appealing. You know, very appealing.
Well, this is what I'll say. Okay, I said this at the very first show of CNT Firestorm. I said he's the Eminem, he's the Justin Bieber, and he's the Elvis of quarterbacks. Okay? And what I mean by that is, and I hope y'all understand, you know, I think you understand what I mean when I say that, right?
Yeah.
He was the first sort of white quarterback that is kind of athletic, like that option quarterback, like the Major Harris, the Tony Rices, I don't know. I can't think of any other guys right now at the top of my head. These great option quarterbacks that were in college. You know what I'm talking about, right? These great black option quarterbacks in college. And then he was kind of like the first big name white guy that could do it. I mean, I think Eric Crouch could do it. He won a Heisman, but I mean, he didn't have that persona as Tim Tebow did, or Tommy Frazier. You know what I'm saying? I kind of compare those two, Tim Tebow and Tommy Frazier. I think they're kind of the same ilk. And, you know, since Tebow kind of was the first white guy to do that, you know, he's blown up. Or like Justin Bieber was kind of like the first white guy to sort of seem like he's black, he's blown up. Elvis was the first white guy to move like the black guys, he blew up. Eminem was the first white guy to rap like the black guys, he blew up. That's what I'm saying. So I think Tim Tebow is of that fold. He's a great athlete, you know, but he's kind of like the first white guy that people saw that and he blew up. You understand where I'm coming from?
Yeah.
So from a standpoint, you know, and I think Tony Watley said something earlier.
I'm about to mention what he said too. Yeah.
Yeah, he said, "Hey, when a man wants to show his kids, they can be like, if I'm a white father in this nation and I have a white son." And he looks at Tommy Frazier, and deep down in my son's going to be like, I can't be like him because he's black. But if he sees Tim Tebow do the same thing Tommy Frazier did, you know, I could, my son's going to think like, hey, you know what, I can be like Tim Tebow one day.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you a question, and let's be honest here. I don't know if that's racist or not. Isn't that part of human nature, though? And it just so happens that Caucasian people are the majority, but don't we actually gravitate towards who we look like in general, and, you know, to make ourselves feel comfortable?
I guess, yeah, from that standpoint, yeah. We do.
I mean, I mean, like I said, I could see if maybe he was getting somebody's spot, you know what I mean, or he was. You know what I mean? Like I said, if they were trying to say, okay, you know, Cam Newton, you got to, you know, put him in Carolina. He's going to start over Cam Newton, you know, or somebody who was clearly more talented than him. But I think, you know, like I said, I think that's part, you know, and I think people, you know, a lot of times that kind of gets, you know, it gets confusing, you know, with racism. I mean, some cases it's obvious, you know, but like I say, even in the cases you brought up, you know, Eminem and Elvis Presley, those are talented dudes. You know, even though they, like I said, they did copy off of what was laid down there before them, but, you know, they themselves did have individual talent. They weren't, you know, they weren't completely untalented. The polarizing part about Tebow to me is maybe, like I say, was he just a good college quarterback and just not an NFL quarterback? You know what I mean? Is you know, especially for him to be drafted in the first round, I think we could all think that was a big mistake, and it's funny because now he's going back to go play with Josh McDaniel again. You know, it's like I said, I think it's, you know, it has to do with, like I say, people want to, Tim Tebow's a comfort food. You know, like you say, you know, people, you know, they want to feel comfortable, you know, so he, you know, he's a cheeseburger. You know, he's something that makes you feel comfortable. He's simple. He's going to taste good, you know, unless, you know, it's hard to mess up a cheeseburger. You know, he's going to taste good, you know, and it makes the majority of people feel better to, you know, to see him around, man. You know, and I think sometimes, you know, that can kind of get, you know, it can kind of get misviewed as racism. But I think it's more, you know, I don't think it's, it might be racism without prejudice, let's say that, you know.
Somebody made a comment, I forgot who, I think on one of our posts we were saying, well, like, what about, you know, Jamarcus Russell? You know, he was a better quarterback than Tim Tebow in college, and seeing that he's still looking, you know, trying out.
He wasn't a better quarterback than Tebow in college.
He wasn't better than Tebow in college.
Tim Tebow was better than Jamarcus Russell in college.
Yeah, I mean, Tim Tebow, you're talking about a top five all-time college quarterback probably.
I disagree with you there. I know he is not. He is not the top five quarterback in college. That is ridiculous. If you had been earlier, we named our top quarterbacks
at BCS. And we also, I don't know if you heard, but we also named Alabama as the top BCS team of the BCS era. But anyway,
Alabama's up there. Alabama's number one. How could you not put Tebow in the top five
all-time court? I mean, look at his win record, 2 national championships, almost 2 Heismans.
What more than the guy has to do? I don't think he was better than Charlie Ward. Florida had talent, though.
They had talent on both sides of the ball, though.
When you're at a top football team, your team is going to have talent. Charlie Ward had talent at Florida State too. So, you know, I mean, like, I mean, well, let me,
he really,
like I said,
he really won one though. Remember, Chris Week was the starter the first time he won it though.
So,
that's what I'm talking about right there. They're trying to minimize Chris Week's contribution, whatever. First of all, I want to say this. Tim Tebow was a great college quarterback. I'm not saying he wasn't a great college quarterback. He was a great college quarterback. But was he the greatest of all? Was he in your top five? No. He is not in my top five. I put Charlie Ward over him.
You could name 5 quarterbacks that were better than him in college.
Yeah.
Then Michael Vick,
off the top of your
Cam Newton.
I like Cam Newton over Tim Tebow.
I take Newton too. I like Charlie Ward over.
That's kind of like my personal favorite, Charlie Ward. Who else? Let me think. I think Michael Vick. Well, how do you talk about Michael Vick?
Mike named Vick is his top quarterback at BCS. I wouldn't take Vick over Tebow. I would put Tommy Frazier
over Tim Tebow. Maybe Ken Dorsey. Would I put Ken Dorsey over Tim Tebow? Quarterbacks I saw. Ty Detmer. I'd put.
Ty Detmer played
1991? Yeah, I like him better than I thought he was pretty good when he played.
You were 10 years old watching Ty Detmer games.
Absolutely, I was watching Ty Detmer games.
I remember Charlie Ward. So
I barely remember Charlie Ward. So I really can't. From what I know, he might have been that good. But like I said, that was also a Florida State team that had a lot of talent on it. But that's what I'm saying. Let's just look at completely what they did in their numbers, and you know, like I say, their numbers, their wins, and you know, and the awards. He's a top five quarterback.
I put Peyton Manning over him too in college. Oh, you're talking about awards?
Peyton Manning never won an SEC championship. Never won a Heisman. Never got close to a national championship. So you put him over?
He won one SEC championship, and he never won a Heisman.
Yes, he did win.
Peyton Manning never won an SEC championship.
I
thought they did when they played Nebraska. The year Nebraska won a national championship, they played Tennessee, and Tennessee I thought was the SEC championship champions.
I know they won a national title after Peyton Manning left. I'd probably have to put
Tim Tebow at around number 6 then. I didn't think about it, now that I sit back and think about it, I'd have to put him at like number 6.
He's a bad boy, man.
Nobody's saying he was a great college quarterback. You know, but he hasn't earned the right to get this media attention. He hasn't earned the right on his professional football. What'd you say?
The media loves him.
Yeah, the media loves him.
Yeah, I guess one of y'all had to say it.
Let's say this. I'm not going to fully try to justify the Tebow hype, but let's say this. Can we say that he was Cam Newton withstanding up until the point Tebow was drafted? He was the best quarterback of our era.
Up until when?
Up until the point he was drafted. So I'm not counting Cam Newton.
What's our era? What do you mean, like?
Our era is being adults. So from 2000 on.
No.
Who can you say was better than Tebow from the? I mean, like Tech said, Matt. I think Matt Leinart. You know, he has a very he could be right up there too. You know,
I take Vince Young over Tebow.
A heartbeat over Tim Tebow.
I take Vince Young too.
Vince Young doesn't have a heartbeat.
Whatever the case is, Reggie Bush, you know, whatever. Let's just say this. Reggie Bush's Heisman was revoked, and Vince Young was second place in the voting. So, you know,
I take
Vince Young over...
just think about it. Even this discussion we're having, that's the point about Tebow. He's such a polarizing character. You know, think about it. That you can't deny that a dude. I mean, I can't, you know, he's a hot topic.
Well, yeah.
Either way you look at it.
And I think, you know what, if New England puts him in a situation for him to succeed, I think he could succeed. Because, like I said, can he make all the throws? No. Can he make all the throws? Is he accurate? No. But when the game's on the line, can he deliver? Yeah. I get that. He can deliver when the game's on the line.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. If you were Tim Tebow at this point in your career, after you see that you might not make it at quarterback, would you be willing to consider a position change to maybe H-back or fullback?
No, I mean, because a bunch of other teams would want to get him. A bunch of other people would want to get him as H-back or
He already said he ain't changing, so he ain't going to change now after, you know, being released and, hey. He ain't going to change.
Nah, he ain't going to change. And New England's going to play him out as a quarterback.
They might use some special gimmick plays, like Wildcat stuff every now and then. They're having a special play or something like that.
Interesting.
They're going to use him.
Let's move on real quick because we only got a couple of minutes left. Has anybody heard any interesting news or rumors coming out from the mini camps this off season?
Well, I think the Bears aren't interested in Jamarcus Russell anymore, and
you say the Bears are not.
They're not interested in
even
Jamarcus
though he had
Russell.
A good workout. I heard that too. I heard he's going to somebody else today. I think he was going to Cleveland or something like that. Maybe to work out something like that.
Yeah.
I did tell you a couple of things that I've heard though, especially rookie wise. I've heard Monty Ball. He's turning a lot of heads in Denver. He might end up as their starting running back this year. And your boy, I'm hearing, might not play tackle, DJ Fluker. I'm hearing he's kind of underwhelming people in San Diego. They say they might move him to guard even.
Why, they say he's either a guard or a tackle.
Yeah.
Why? Why would they do that?
No, he's not good. I'm telling you what I heard. They're saying they might move him guard. They're saying he can't play tackle.
I mean, hey, you know, it's not an indictment on Alabama. I mean,
I'm just saying, you know, that's just. I mean, like I said, he's a guy. Remember, I told you, I never really liked him. I thought he was always an underachiever. I think that the guy you guys have coming out this year, well, if he does come out, what's the cat, Kwanaju? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think he's better. I think he's far better than Fluker in my mind. You know, I think, like I said, I think people are looking at Fluker to be the next Andre Smith, and I don't think it's happening. And, you know, I think San Diego might have wasted a high draft pick on him. Also, if you look at look
the
at
guards, though, getting just athletic now, too. So, hey, you might be seeing more guards going high, though.
That's true, too. I heard that, too. But if you look at Buffalo, they just now cut Tavares Jackson. So, I mean, E.J. Manuel might be the starting quarterback this year. What do you guys think about that?
Hey, they took him first round, so sure. If you're going to take him first round, then, hey, you're looking at him to be your starting quarterback.
And look, and he's the he's the perfect A-side player. It kind of goes extends back to what I'm talking about. He's the perfect A-side player. You know what I mean by A-side and B-side, right? Y'all know what I mean by that, right? He's the perfect A-side player, and they're going to come up with something about him. Trust me. Mark, book it. They will
I
say
also,
he's not
I also
a leader.
Want to mark this in the book, too, folks. I also want to mark this in the book. This is one of the first times Clavel has ever made a prediction that has ended up absolutely true from the first to the last. He's the only reason, and I give him complete props for this. He's the only person who was telling, you know, until it kind of became kind of known that it was going to happen, he was the only person saying that E.J. Manuel was going to go in the first round and maybe go first overall.
Yep, he was. Yep.
So I got to give him complete credit.
And you see, the reason why Geno Smith went second round and the reason why E.J. Manuel went first round is because they're, one is an A-side player, and the other is a B-side player. That's why.
So
that's the only reason.
How do you think that West Virginia was? Because I'm hearing, like I said, I'm starting to hear a lot of negative stuff about Geno Smith now. Why? How do you think West Virginia? How were they able to cover that up for so long?
What did they do? What did he do at West Virginia?
Like what?
Like what did Geno Smith do?
Well, he didn't do anything, but you're starting to hear, you know, attitude problems, you know, problems with reading authority, you know, with authority, you know, just different issues. I mean, not issue. I mean, I'm talking about on the field issues and stuff like that.
Yeah, he's the B side. He made that statement to the media the day before he got drafted, as far as thank the media for giving him motivation or something like that. He kind of was attacking some people in the media. You know, that right there, he stepped out of line. You know, he wasn't in his place. And so the media backlashed on him. So, and you know, the GMs and owners, they don't like it when he doesn't play his part, you know. Whereas DJ Manuel played his part.
I also think what's funny, too, coming out of West Virginia, some people might have forgot that's a Dade County boy right there. You know, he's Miami straight up and down. So, you know, that's
I don't think nothing's wrong with his character. I don't think he did anything wrong. I don't think what they said about him having an attitude on the sideline, they showed a picture. He wasn't having no attitude with his players on the sideline. He's a pretty good guy. I mean, he's a very good guy, but
I'm not saying he's a bad guy. I'm just saying he's not going to, you know, like you say, he's not going to be the fall in line guy, you know, like they want him to be. He's going to speak his mind.
He's going to speak his mind, and that's not going to be good.
That's what I mean. He's not going to be – you know, the fall in line kind of guy. He's gonna say what he thinks and do it. You know, like I say, if, you know, for some reason, I felt that it was unjust criticism. You know, when he fired his agent, you know, people, you know, try to jump on him because that. To me, that's a choice, and to me, that's, you know, that's a mature choice to do that. A lot of people will be afraid to do that before the draft. So, you know, or right after the draft. So to me, you know, like I said, that says something to him that he's gonna be in charge of his own, you know, of himself, you know, and not let anybody else be in charge of him.
He was Jay Z's company too.
And they really don't like that. And
what, Jay Z?
And so they don't like when marquee players team up, because Kevin Durant is doing the same thing now. And they're gonna turn the media's gonna turn on him too.
But overall, let's wrap it up with this too, because we only got a couple minutes left. Overall, Fazel, what do you think about the athletes going towards Jay-Z? Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
I mean, if Jay-Z can put the right people in place to, you know, to help these players out, I don't know what Jay-Z's – I guess it's a good thing if Jay-Z knows what he's doing. I don't know if Jay-Z knows what he's doing.
I mean, is this going to be a hobby for him, though? That's my thing. Is this going to be a hobby for him, like being an owner was, or like being an agent was for Master P, or is this going to be something he's really going to put, you know, his mind into? What do you think, Mike?
Go ahead, Clausel. Go ahead, Clausel. He can answer it.
Go ahead.
I just think that, you know, I don't think he's going to really – I think he's just going to oversee it, and he's going to hire some sort of agents under him that know what they're doing to try to get the marquee players to come towards him instead of, you know, go towards someone else. So to keep the pot within the community, and I like that. That's very revolutionary. So hopefully Jay-Z knows what he's doing. I don't know if he does. So I guess to answer your question, I think it's a good idea. We'll just see what happens. Hey, it's a start.
Okay. All right, you guys. Well, that's been a good show. Go ahead, Mike. Fit in real quick.
I kind of was like, yeah. I mean, I don't know Kevin Durant. I just heard, but I didn't see the article. I'm like, what? You know, he's a superstar himself, you know, getting that right, you know. I'm surprised he didn't try to, you know, he's real close with LeBron James. I'm surprised he didn't try to team up with LeBron James people. I mean, yeah, goes back to what Clydesdale was saying.
LeBron switched agents about four times, so, you know, that's weird. But anyway, let's wrap it up
today. He did
for
switch four times?
What'd you say?
You know, said LeBron James switched agents four times. I thought he had his own. So at one, he had his own representation group. His friend started and doing
no,
his thing
actually
now.
He's still kind of off-subject, but he started out with a guy from Oakland who he's actually a family friend of mine named Aaron Goodwin, and he represents a lot of people out here. And then he's the one who got him his first contract with Nike. And then he switched to another guy. Then he switched to Maverick Carter, who I think that was his friend, that worldwide dude. Now he switched to somebody else. But anyway, we're out of time here. Thanks for joining us, TNT Firestorm, everybody. We're going to be back on air next week. Claude will be back. Look forward to seeing you guys. Peace.
Peace.
Peace, y'all.